Welcome to Business Watch, and time to talk about the future of work. Burnout, isolation, exhaustion, lack of passion for the company's purpose. I think every day we see another headline about how the pandemic has induced remote working environments that have decimated once vibrant company cultures. Yet on the other side of this, employees are comfortable working remotely. I've seen a recent Microsoft survey revealing that three quarters of service workers don't want to return to the office. And after 2 years of remote productivity, it certainly makes sense. And I think many pundits are telling us that we can't expect people to return to the way things were pre-pandemic. Our business leaders have obviously got their work cut out for them because the last 24 months have changed everything. I think for leaders, for employees, for businesses, as the dust is settling, one fact becomes clear. The power has shifted from organizations to people and from profit to a more mutual prosperity, from me to we, so to speak. And employees are now starting to ask human questions about the work that they perform. Why am I doing this? What is it for? And how can we do it better? And I think many are choosing to leave their jobs if they find the wrong answers to those questions. And the competition to attract new talent is growing fiercer than ever. The only problem is business leaders are also prioritizing a host of other strategic objectives that encompass that business trinity, as we always talk about, process, people, and technology. And the risk, of course, is that competing priorities are going to paralyze any of these new initiatives from moving forward. So to better understand the state of the modern enterprise and how leaders are preparing for long-term success, it's a great pleasure to welcome Dashni Vilakazi, MD of The Media Shop, Srini Naika, Vice President of Commercial and Content Distribution at Paramount Africa, Joey Kavutlu, who's MD of FCB, and Samira Mohammed, the HR Director for Microsoft South Africa. Samira, perhaps you could kick us off here. How has the world of work changed from your vantage point at Microsoft?
Thank you so much for having me and for leading into this question. Look, I think you summed it up quite beautifully in terms of the fundamental change around how people define the role of their jobs today, right? And their lived experiences and their expectations today are fundamentally different. I think one of the biggest things is this content around, or the topic around, flexibility. And what people are prioritizing today versus what they prioritized previously. We see the shift in terms of people thinking about their personal well-being, their health and safety, the ability to have more flexible time with their families. And the pandemic has really allowed them to rethink about how they blend work and life, and given them the opportunity to do so. So understanding and really keeping pace with this new expectation is a challenge that every organization, including Microsoft, is really facing, albeit, you know, with the advancement of technology. When we think about some of these challenges, you know, we've defined a few set of ideas that we think are going to be critical for business leaders to think about in the future. The first one is around employees are having a new, what we call work it culture or work it equation. A lot of employees say that they're more likely this time around to prioritize their health and their well-being over career and growth and progress in an organization. And with things like the Great Reshuffle, the Great Resignation, semigration, immigration, all coming into play, with hybrid work being something that people are now really thinking about much more intentionally, we've got to make it worth it for employees to stay, worth it for what they are looking for. And this causes a great uncertainty for leaders and managers and even organizations when they're thinking about how to entice people to come back to the office, how to entice them to stay in organizations, and what does that retention philosophy look like? It's no longer around purely compensation or career growth or promotion. It's around making them feel valued, making them feel valued for the things that they are looking for. We also have to think about what is that commute going to be worth it for employees, right? Mm-hmm. What is going to be making it worth it for them to come to the office in the future? Because we've been doing this for so long, we've realized that a lot of the stuff we do can be done remotely, can be done with as much flexibility. So what are we going to do to make that commute worth it? And the last one I would say that we need to think about is, how do we bridge the divide between employees who choose to remain flexible, employees who choose to remain work from home, and employees who choose to come to the office? How do we bridge that divide and recreate that social capital and engagement and connection? A lot of the stuff that has been lost between the water cooler conversations or the passage of the corridor talk conversations, how do we make that a seamless connection point for our citizens? today. So those are some of the things that we've been thinking about, and how do we leverage technology to help us and enable that for our teams?
Lots for business leaders to grapple with there. Joey, from your vantage point at FCB, you know, in the creative industries, the creative space is all about collaboration. It's about getting together and getting those creative juices flowing. How have you seen the world of work change from your vantage point?
Yeah, certainly, you're 100% correct. You know, one of the things that we kind of pride ourselves on at FCB from a creativity perspective is diversity. You know, living in a country like ours, it is important to have a very diverse team in order to kind of share ideas and share perspectives and share experiences. And what we found was that it's very difficult to do that remotely on Teams calls. You know, people log on, they chat for 30 minutes, and then they log off. Versus when I'm in the office, I'll bump into individuals who, you know, for instance, my CCO, I discovered that he's a sneakerhead, because whenever I saw him at the office, he was wearing brand new sneakers, and they were always clean and they were always different. So what then happens is that when you're having a conversation about creativity within the popular culture space, I then know that, wait, Tiriso is an individual that is into the sneaker culture, so therefore he's an individual that I can talk to about that. All of that gets lost if all of our interactions are happening online. Our diversity is not exchanged. We don't share our experiences as richly. So what you do lose out in any of those spaces, or in fact in any space where collaboration is required, is that you lose that human touch that people have to actually exchange ideas in a serendipitous way. You know, great ideas don't keep hours from 9 to 5 and so forth. They happen, as was said, during the water cooler moments over lunch and stuff like that. So for us, it's been very, very important to understand the fact that what people enjoyed over the pandemic was the flexibility, not necessarily the isolation. Because that's one of the things that's actually, for me, that's been quite a thing to clarify, was the fact that people don't necessarily want to be at home, but what they do want to be, or where they do want to be, is in an environment that's conducive for the kind of work that they're doing. So for us, the most important thing really is to move away from this one size fits all, and understand that previously we come from a place of one size fits some. And if organizations can get a little bit more flexible around the fact that, like, you've got diverse departments, diverse people, and people work differently, how do we as organizations meet our people halfway and give them the kind of environments that best are conducive for the kind of work that they do? You know, even stuff like open plan offices, they work in some places, they don't work in other places. So some people may not like coming to the office purely because they've got to work in this open plan space where this individual is an individual that likes, you know, silence and likes to be in an office. So it's about tweaking very different things about the working space and understanding that it can't be a one size fits all. You've got to be able to design in such a manner that really meets the requirements of individuals, of departments, and of specializations. And certainly that's what we're doing. It's not easy because, you know, it's much easier for an organization to say everybody's doing that. It gets a little bit more tricky where you've got different requirements and different and responding to different needs for different departments. But in the world that we're living in, I think it is a responsibility, and it's incumbent on businesses to make that effort to ensure that they're catering to the different personalities, the different departments, and different structures that are within our organization.
Fascinating insights. It's a hyper-flexibility, hyper-personalization of that flexibility according to what you need. And Dashni, certainly from my vantage point, I love the flexibility of being able to take my daughters to school, fetch them in the occasional afternoon. But I didn't like the fact that I was isolated and just working from home and having to deal with the dogs and the hardy-dars bleeding into my recordings in my home studio. So, you know, it was nice to go back into the studio when we could. From your vantage point at the Media Shop, how have you viewed this change? What do you see as the future of work? What does that look like for you?
You know, tapping into the adaptability and the flexibility that Joey and Samira spoke about, I think the key thing for us has been the culture of trust, and the culture of trust that goes with adaptability. And when you've got those quadrants pretty much ticked, half your battle is pretty much done, right? And that is becoming the competitive advantage to building a thriving organization. And Samira spoke about the social capital. And we see social capital. For me, social capital has always been the culture code that an organization has put together in terms of network of relationships, how you communicate, The languages that you use, the kind of talkability that happens, and the slang that, you know, plays around in the office, is how do you take that social capital now to an online space, and it can also live in a, you know, in a real time space in the office when people are having, you know, people are coming into the office, and that's what they bought into originally was this culture. But they still take that culture away, and what we've done is, we've tried to create these, you know, these segments where, you know, on a Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, we have different teams that come in. And we've brought these teams in because collaboration is really the power that holds these teams together to co-create strategies and business solutions for our different clients. And with making sure that that is still happening, where people are still tasting the soil of the office. I try and be at the office almost every day. And when I meet with these people, I structure my FaceTime so that when I know these teams are coming in and how I can connect with them and help them to solve and ignite problem solving within the realm of their teams. And what we've seen is, as we're bringing more and more people back to the office, I'm seeing a speed at which solutions are being materialized, and then when they go back to their spaces back at home, then the administration and the real hard knock, you know, working through happens. And that positive culture has really helped. And what we found is that the, you know, in the past, it was about promotions and salaries, but more and more, it's been spoken about that that personal well-being and the work-life balance and the flexibility in hours still stands the test of time. It is still something that any employer will put their hand up. The key to unlock this has been the managers. They are the critical bridge, and they are the unlockers that really bridge the employee's experience and leverage the leadership priorities to make it happen. And the more you empower these managers with resources and training, there's a transition that we've seen that is happening, because policy gets set, you know, at the top, and leaders really need to decentralize that whole decision making so that managers can run with those decisions and still create and protect that culture very, very closely.
It certainly is an evolution that we haven't seen in the post kind of industrial era, where the office was really designed around that 9-to-5 cubicle, clock in, clock out. We have something completely different now, and that's why it's so interesting. Strini, as your organization has kind of transformed during the last 2 years as well, you've had to manage that through this evolving world of work. What has your experience been?
Thank you very much, and good morning to everybody once again. My colleagues have basically said a lot, but just to touch on a few points and also add in, definitely there's more of a balanced life that's required by employees right now, and they're demanding that. We're seeing that very clearly, talking about the flexibility, the ability to pick up their kids, but also basically contribute towards their KPIs at the workforce. But if I could just latch onto another piece, I think it goes more to what Joey's mentioned within, and you know, it varies industry to industry, I think, this topic as well. But within the creative and the media industry right now, definitely, you know, we've moved more into an output-based type of scenario. And if I could link that up to more your quantitative side, it's very easy to basically kind of state that, yeah, you want flexibility, you can have your flexibility and your balanced life, but there's certain deliverables that need to be achieved from a quant perspective. But then there's the core perspective in our industry, as per what Joey's referred to earlier. There's a very big need for our industry to create through innovation and also basically collaborate through creative styles, but face to face. You can never get that over the computer or a virtual screen. So we also basically kind of really encourage individuals, whilst we have a 50%, you know, work at the office, work at home policy, to come in and make you know, get proper ROI when you're actually face to face with your other colleague. That's the way you'd basically kind of get those creative juices actually growing as well, to ensure that obviously we drive that collaborative, creative innovation space that's required within the media and content industry.
And I really want to unpack what that that word collaboration means, because it's often used, but just to get a tangible feeling for it. But before we do that, I want to also get my head around the role of technology here, because for me, being flexible would not be possible without technology. And Samira, I just think here about being able to drop my daughters at school, and instead of wasting an hour in traffic into the office, I can now find a coffee shop close by. They're loving me at the moment. I'm spending far too much money on cappuccinos and breakfasts in the morning, but there's good Wi-Fi. I can log in and I can do so much more thanks to the technology collaboratively. Just how important is this tech component to enable this greater flexibility?
And I think, you know, it has really become a game changer. We know technology is an enabler just by default, right? But how has it become an enabler in this new way of working and this new world of work? You know, my colleagues have touched on it, but we've thought about it in a different way. We've got an entirely new operating model where we think about people, places, and processes, and how those three things seamlessly integrate in order to create operational efficiency and effectiveness in your organization. But touching on the people aspect of it, we recognize that people in this new hybrid world need three things, right? They need a work site. This is the physical location of where you're going to work, whether that's a coffee shop, or in your car, or at home. They're going to need a work location. Geographically, where are you going to be based? Because hybrid has opened up the doors. You know, for example, you no longer have to be the place where your headquarters is. You can work in the coastal region if you wanted to today and work remotely. You can pick your location. And the third thing you're actually going to need is working hours. And people are able to structure working hours. So how do you manage everyone's unique needs related to their work site, their work location, and their working hours? And every employee has the opportunity to define what that looks like and feels like for them based on their ability to drop and pick their kids, to live closer to home, to manage the advantages that hybrid is going to give them. But then you need to overlay that with the technology that's going to allow you to achieve those business results, as Srini has mentioned, to achieve those outcomes that you are looking for. At the same time, though, imagine a scenario where you have six different people in one team, all with different setups based on those three scenarios. And how do you merge that in order to achieve the team's cohesive impact that we're looking for? One of the things that we've done is, whilst we have the technology to enable it, those conversations around team agreements, team dynamics, team norms, the culture, as Deshni mentioned, that you overlay on top of that from a trust perspective, you've got to start having those conversations first and then allowing people to leverage the technology in order to make those teams effective. You know, we've built an employee experience platform across the entire employee value proposition, from learning and development, from growth, from well-being and mental health. And we built it in one cohesive place so that our employees can feel like they can connect anywhere. They can connect with their teams. They can manage their own personal well-being. Managers can manage their team's well-being through technology as well. And so you've got to think about those agreements, what those agreements, team norms, and cultural dynamics are going to look like, and how the technology is going to allow you to enable that based on the scenarios each person chooses.
And it's, you know, Joey, it's about codifying what those norms are, because I often refer to it as living at work, not working from home. Because I'm one of those individuals, I tend to roll out of bed and I switch on my laptop, and I've really got to be intentional about switching it off, because I just end up working until 9, 10 in the evening. And I suppose we've got to manage that. We've obviously, as managers, as leaders, you've got to watch out for burnout and that kind of thing. And that comes back to setting these kind of rules of engagement. How have you done it at FCB?
I mean, that's a very, very important part. One of the things that I must say about technology across the board, whether it's from Microsoft, from Zoom, from whoever, the technology is there to do every single thing that we want to do. If anything, I feel like we need to catch up and utilize the technology even more. But in terms of setting up those boundaries, it does become quite important for the organization to set a framework within which it needs to operate. So while there needs to be flexibility, there also does need to be a certain point in time or a meeting point where people can actually connect. The other thing that we have to realize as well is that we may be an organization on our side, but we've got clients on the other side. And our clients, you know, there's some who have gone back to 9 to 5 back in the office. There's some who are hybrid and there's some who are completely remote. But because we're servicing clients across the board, we have to find a middle ground where we are able to kind of meet all of our clients halfway. And for that, we do ensure that from an hour's perspective, there are specific hours that are mandated that you do need to be at work, that you do need to be available. While people choose to work late into the evenings because they want to move their hours around, the one thing that we must respect is that when meetings need to happen with our clients and so forth, we do need to align with those times. Through technology as well, our organization has found itself in a great position where we're doing a lot of work for companies and brands abroad. And these are companies and brands abroad that are working in different time zones. So again, it does show that if we can work in different time zones, there is an ability for people to, it's the good side of flexibility that the organization leverages. Therefore, if we can leverage that side of flexibility, we need to allow our people to leverage that side of flexibility as well. But the norms that are set in place are getting our people to understand what is prioritized. If a client is only available at 1 o'clock during the time where you need to pick up your kids, you need to prioritize that meeting at 1 o'clock and work around that, or plan ahead in such a manner that ensures that you can avoid those kind of situations.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that is a give and take, but it is important for the organization to set its standards and the basic principles and the basic rules that needs to be applied. By setting those standards and those basic rules and principles, it does then allow people to be flexible around those rules and those principles. Failure to have those structures means that people won't have anything to plan against. And what often happens in those situations is that an organization then says, none of this is working, therefore everybody back at the office, everybody back to 9 to 5, because right. They've failed to actually provide the structure within which people need to be flexible around.
And very often a failure of leadership, and not necessarily a failure of this new model. Dash, as we've got 4 minutes left, I just want to end off on what this collaboration means. What does this word collaboration mean? Because I hear collaboration, sometimes I worry. It sends frisons of fear down my neck that everyone needs to be included in an email that could have been sorted with 3 people, or a Teams meeting with 2 or 3 people, but you've included 16 on it. What does collaboration mean?
No matter how much the workplace has changed, collaboration is still going to be the pivotal, it's almost like the demigod in the middle of everything, right? And in business, collaboration, there are some brands that have really done some phenomenal work around collaboration. It's about bringing the right data and the right people to a task to deliver on that impact. And we are in a global supply chain crisis right now, okay? And when you look at, there's a leading global brand currently in the world who has used many of the products from Samira's company to be, you know, termed the best connected brewer. And what they've done is they've taken their sales, their marketing, and their supply chain process to feed and serve the end customer to the best of their ability. They've transformed their entire sales model, which is the sales model to a B2B, so their sales agent who calls on a lot of the bars and the restaurants, to just digitally enable that whole sales model process. And what they've done is these sales agents sit with data that enable the B2B client, where the supply chain information that's fed through the entire program literally gives them predictive analysis data, like what is the weather going to be like for the next couple of days, which affects the ordering process of beer. It's understanding that there's going to be a public holiday. What is the historical data around this? Just to plan ahead, to manage the whole supply chain crisis that we are currently, so that at the end of the day, the end customer is achieving what they need to achieve. And what else this brand has done is that because they've centralized the entire marketing process, they've managed to launch the entire Bond Association marketing campaign at the touch of a button in one go, simultaneously around the world. Okay, and what else they've done is they've taken the customer experience of gaming, okay, and as you know, with this brand, gaming, that where they've highlighted through UEFA and being a sponsor, quite a few of the games were played globally around the world, and they've managed through this program the lag effect, so and the leaderboard, so that it was totally interactive. And I think that's just so it's about bringing technology and the magic together to build a brand.
Well, it's what Joey was saying, just as we've got a minute to go. I just wanted to get Strini's comment here about using the technology, perhaps even more so than we are now. There's still so much potential. Strini, your final thoughts?
Yeah, agreed. Just on the technology side, absolutely. You know, so I mean, even now in environment and our industry as well, within our company, we've had to set up a work office environment as well. So whether it's a 50% policy, whether you come to work or you stay at home, we had to basically enable them at home. But I think there's two points I just want to mention, which is a concern right now as well, with regards to work from home, the RTO policy, and obviously technology. It's load shedding and basically the general economy. And we need to take those two factors into account with our employees as well, because those affect their ability to basically perform. And you know, load shedding, we can't get around it, but I think it's about also basically kind of ensuring the technology that resides within the home space is geared up to mitigate that risk. And also being flexible with our employees, whether it's a 50% policy or maybe even more flexible, to ensure that obviously the cost of living risk that they face is also taken into account whilst we bring this new habit in terms of the RTO policy to life. So I think those are two factors which we can discuss for a long time, but
I think in there,
factors that affect our people right now.
Absolutely. Stridi, in that there's a huge opportunity for a brand to help ameliorate the impacts of load shedding by helping South Africans get off the grid with a funded generator or something like that. Maybe one of the big banks could play in that space. I'm sure there's a lot of brand equity to be had. That was Dashni Vilakazi, MD of the Media Shop, joined by Stridi Naika, Vice President of Commercial and Content Distribution at Paramount Africa, Joey Kavutlu, MD of FCB, and Samira Mohammed, the HR Director for Microsoft South Africa, talking about the future of work.